And happy Wednesday to you here on Bulls Beat. We'll do a little bit more digging into the next opponent for USF. We can tell you when exactly the baseball team will be hitting the field in Austin, Texas against the Longhorns. We've also got some good stuff to get you ready for what to watch for in the National Track and Field Meet, which 9 members of the Bulls will be taking part in. How special is that to be able to continue their season? And just another sign that Eric Jenkins is the right guy, with his staff, of course, to lead the turnaround of that program. We'll be keeping an eye on what's going on out in Oregon over the next few days, and we'll give you sort of the starting lineup for the Bulls when it comes to that. In our second block, we'll throw in some other news, including great stuff when it comes to a standout on the softball program. And as we do on Wednesdays and Fridays, we end the hour with some conference news. And, of course, there is another baseball team from the conference doing pretty well in the NCAA tournament. So we'll take you around the American with the East Carolina Pirates and also drop in some other notes to tell you about. Now, first of all, if you were listening yesterday, you heard a full half hour show of highlights, and I said there were more where that came from. If you don't believe it, head to the Unlimited Unloaded page on SoundCloud or Apple Podcasts. You should already know about this, but if you don't, go to soundcloud.com, type USF, and you'll see the page Unlimited Unloaded. It's where we unload the shows and sometimes give you longer versions of the shows. I realized that I was kind of squeezing a lot into the second segment, which was the South Alabama highlight segment. Only had 11 minutes to make it fit our half-hour block, and then as I was sort of kicking back on Tuesday afternoon and throwing in some additional highlights, that segment went from 11 minutes to 27 minutes. That tells you how much was going on against South Alabama when the Bulls ended up, of course, winning the game. And I want to go back to something that happened in the first game that we didn't even include on that expanded version of the show, because I think it might be a great important note on many fronts. And that is what happened. Again, this was in the resumption of the game that got pushed from Sunday night to Monday afternoon with the Bulls down 4-0. There was actually no scoring in the resumed 5 innings, so South Alabama won that game. But a performance during it, I think, could have some good repercussions for the Bulls.
Donaldson, another example of what we're talking about, hitting .239, which does impress you until you realize he was .197 in the regular season. Everyone heating up at the right time for South Al, but he cannot get a hold of that curveball, and he swings and misses. Another strikeout for Hemingway, 4 of them.
This is quite a performance so far for Hemingway. This is what the Bulls were expecting of him this year. As we mentioned, no question about his stuff. And he's looked very sharp so far in this appearance.
I mean, that was to a lefty, and halfway to home plate, it looked like it was going to be inside corner. It ends up outside corner for a beautiful pitch, and that's another one to Santi Montiel. Top of the order, big-time spark for them, especially of late, and he's down 0-2. A curve and a fastball. Nice work here for Hemingway. And again, one of those things that 0-2 pitch, tries that curveball but stays outside. You might look back on later on today, whenever that is, and go, hey, he helped speed along the process as far as pitching goes. Really gets into that fastball, and it's lined, but right to Ruiz at second base. That's a tough guy to get out these days, and he does for the second out in the seventh. A threat at the top of the order, and this guy has always been a threat. Ethan Wilson, a deep line out to right field in the first at bat. Flew out and then singled his last time up. And he is going to be a draft pick before you know it. Looks at a fastball, though, on the outside corner. Not to his liking, 0-1. 8 homers, 34 RBI. Ooh, beautiful curveball there by Hemingway. And Wilson just looked at it, 0-2. Guy has only struck out 20 times, so this would be an achievement. Trust me. Fouls that pitch off. I don't think Wilson's going to be taking too many two-strike pitches that are anywhere near the zone. And he does strike him out with a fastball. What a performance by Devin Hemingway. Strikes out 5 of the 6 men he retires, and I don't think that's going to end his outing.
As we found out, he was a special player, Ethan Wilson, and you heard it. Devin Hemingway, part of a 3-inning, almost perfect situation when it came to relief out of the pen. And Hemingway had just had issues finding the zone this year. Well, a couple things. As you heard me allude to there during that call of the 7th inning, it was going to help make sure that the Bulls had as much of a full bullpen as they could for the final game, which turned in handy, although Orion Kerkring took the lion's share of those innings. But If you really want to be optimistic here, the Bulls hope to continue their season for a while. Now, we'll get to Texas in a second. It won't be easy, but Hemingway, if he can pitch like that, all of a sudden becomes a legitimate, you're not hesitant to go to him, option out of the pen. And even this weekend in Austin against lefties, for example, you could call on him. It's been Logan Lyle for the most part, and then now Joe Sanchez. If you add Devin Hemingway as a third reliable lefty, that's pretty special. And let's just spin it forward optimistically. Not going to put anything past the Bulls, yes. Beating the number two team in the country is not going to be an easy task, but not going to put it past them. If you make it to the College World Series, it's eight teams in one city, and they split it into two groups of four. It's essentially another regional that you have to win and another super regional that you have to win because it's two groups of four, so it's that same regional format, double elimination. The difference is, since everyone's in the same spot, it's more spread out. If you'll notice, the schedule for the College World Series goes from June 19th through the 30th. It's a long event, so you don't have to worry about trying to maybe win four games in 3 days, for example. It's more time to rest your staff, but the fact is you're going to have to win at least three games, if not four, to get to the final. And then here's where, I mean, that's actually kind of the same format as the American Athletic Conference Championship because there were eight teams, right? But the difference is once you get to the final, as we know the Bulls did, instead of having one game, which they won against UCF, the finals of the College World Series is actually a best two out of three, which, guess what, is the same deal as the Super Regional. By the way, good luck to FSU, unless you're an Oklahoma Sooners softball fan, after they took the first of their softball College World Series best of three last night. But back to this format, of course, that means you're going to have guys that maybe can become your de facto fourth, fifth, who knows, sixth starting pitcher. And all of a sudden, Devin Hemingway, if not that, becomes a guy that can eat up longer amount of innings. And now it looks better for the staff going forward. Jake Sullivan is the guy who caught him during that performance.
I loved to see that out of Devin. You know, we've been wanting that out of him all year long, and it was great to see from him. He had really good fastball command, and that really made his off-speed play well because he's had really good stuff, but, you know, he struggled to find the zone at times. But he went out there, and he threw his stuff over the plate and said, here it is, hit it, and he did a really good job for it.
If you want to hear full comments from Coach Mole and Jake, go to the Unlimited Unloaded page. We posted those up there on Tuesday afternoon, which, by the way, I wanted to keep calling Monday afternoon because yesterday definitely felt like a Monday. Everything sort of blurred together with all the rain delays and whatnot. But yes, we indeed played those last games on a Monday. So anyway, the one comment that I also wanted to, even though we have it on that page, wanted to play here on the stream because it's another guy that could be a definite X factor. He came on late in the first game, put together a fine at bat, but flew out. And then, as you know, tacked it on at the end, Drew Brutcher. First of all, that moment again, followed by head coach Billy Moll's thoughts.
And that'll bring up Nick Gonzalez, who struck out his last time. He's 0-for-2 with a walk.
Here's the moment.
And they're going to pinch hit, and here comes Drew Brutcher. Believe this is Brutcher's first at-bat since April 18th. He's had hand and thumb problems. And he wasn't right for a while before they shut him down. Hitting .295, he was in the mid-300s for much of the season. Seven homers, 15 driven in. And we'll see if he can contribute here and if he can convince the coaching staff that maybe he's well enough to get some time in game two today, if there is one. Low 3-2.
Showing some good play discipline for a guy that hasn't been in the plate in a little bit.
Well, he had 21 walks. Keep in mind, after missing almost 2 months, that's still fourth best on the team. 3-2. Fly ball center field, playable. Sandel going back, but he's got room. Edge of the warning track, two down.
Boy, that was a good swing. You know, it looks like Drew, yeah, he gets a big greeting from Kunkel. Maybe shed a few pounds since we last saw him, but he's got that power. Man, too bad that was the deepest part. And Brutcher drives it into right field for a hit. Eaton gets a good turn at second base. It's bobbled out there. He still could score. They're going to send him around. There's no way that one's going to catch Eaton. And Drew Brutcher comes through. A big pinch hit single. Don't think there's an RBI there. Don't care. It's 5-3.
I've had that in my back pocket for a week. I've just been waiting. He's still not ready to go play a position yet. I didn't know if I was going to have the guts to do it, but my gut told me, get him in. His first at bat was very promising, and then there late with the righty on the mound and a chance to do some more damage, we rolled the dice, and Brutch is a chance to be a really special player here, as you guys can see.
So you heard him say it, still not ready to play a position, and here's the tricky part, of course. That means he could DH, but Nelson Rivera has been such a reliable performer, so yeah, that's kind of a stuck situation. You're not going to kick out one of the outfielders right now with Jared Eaton doing what he's doing and Roberto Peña in center field, but with his bat, of course. And then in right field, Daniel Cantu is not going anywhere. So for a change, the Bulls have maybe one too many bats, because it's been pretty easy with the lack of depth due to injuries. Oh, incidentally, a guy who got hurt early in the season after a couple of flashes of brilliance, Keanu Jacobs Guichard. What a cool guy. You'll see ESPN Plus sort of flashing. He's the cool one in the crowd, and he is there, not actually in the dugout with the team, but he is with the team. So they've got a great vibe going, as you know. Now, not going to kill the vibe, but the team that they have to advance past to get to Omaha is pretty good. The number two team in the country, the Texas Longhorns. And let's throw some stuff at you about them. We'll dig deeper into them on Friday's show. Incidentally, no show Thursday. Plan on that being a travel day. And then Friday, we'll really fully preview. First of all, a couple of stats that jump out. Their pitching staff. Their ERA is 2.87. They've got two aces, essentially, including a guy up for the Golden Spikes Award. We'll tell you about in a second. And then their team on-base percentage. That would be 400. Now, every one of their nine regular hitters, now updated through the regional, is batting at least 251. That's pretty good. Everybody's 250 hitter. Every time we play a team, there's going to be someone either below 200 or a couple guys in the low 200s. Not with the Texas Longhorns, but add the walks in, and their team on-base percentage is 400. They walked 341 times. Their opponents walked 189 times. They also have, I mentioned, all of their regulars hitting 250 and above. Their lightest hitting guy, Eric Kennedy, has 20 RBIs. The other eight guys all have at least 30. By comparison, the Bulls just have four guys with 30 RBI or better. Carmine Lane has 43, also the only Bulls regular above 300 with a 315 hitting percentage. The Bulls, keep in mind, until that last game, were hitting 227 in the first three regional games. So they got it going, the bats going in Clearwater. They weren't as prolific, although they put up that 10 spot against Miami. But hey, numbers, right? The main number is they're still going. And their win total now is 31, and that's enough to get them into the super regional. But just by comparison's sake, Texas certainly has an advantage there. And again, their pitching staff is pretty phenomenal. We'll tell you the three guys that the Bulls are going to face. It's going to be a 2 out of 3. Hopefully we'll get to see all three, unless the Bulls beat the first two, which will not be easy. This has been an enjoyable ride to go on, and we're not done yet. Coming to Austin, Texas are the Bulls this weekend. The Super Regionals actually begin on Friday. We'll go ahead and give you the rest of the rundown for the tournament now before we specifically give you the dates for the Bulls and Texas and a little bit more on the Longhorns in a second here. But the beginning of the Super Regionals, which again are essentially 2 out of 3 series. If a team gets the first two, there's no need to play game three. They're off to Omaha. Arkansas is the number one national seed. And again, this was a thing that I made sure to point out as everyone was getting a little nervous on Sunday night while we were having to wait out a middle of the game delay with the Bulls down 4-0, but knowing even if they couldn't come back, they'd have another chance. Well, guess what? The best team in the tournament needed that extra chance. That'd be Arkansas. They lost to the Big Ten champion, Nebraska, which was probably unfairly placed in the same region as Arkansas. Should have been seeded higher and not have to go up against number one. Forced them to a game on Monday, which Arkansas was able to win. And their opponent, starting at 6 o'clock on Friday, will be NC State, which actually went 3-0 and knocked off the host in Ruston, Louisiana twice. Pretty convincingly, actually, 8-3 and then 14-7. So seems like there's been a lot of ACC versus SEC matchups. Go figure, as they're the two conferences that got the most teams in. The first Super Regional will be actually our friends East Carolina at 4th-ranked Vanderbilt. We'll talk more about that on Around the American at the end of the hour. The second series to begin will incidentally be in Lubbock, Texas, number 8 Texas Tech against number 9 Stanford. Interestingly enough, the Big 12 only got four teams into the field. Now, they were all regional hosts, but maybe telling you that the conference that Texas, the Bulls' opponent, won isn't exactly the strongest conference. I mean, it's not weak, obviously, but it maybe gives you a little bit of hope, and we'll tell you more about the Longhorns, who actually struggled in their conference tournament here in a second. But Stanford, again, got forced to a final game as UC Irvine scored six runs on them in the bottom of the eighth to stun them 8-4 and pushed them in the if-necessary game by the score of 11-8. Texas Tech, the team that swept the Bulls right before conference play, well, it did not struggle, winning all three in its regional. The other one to begin on Friday will be Ole Miss at Arizona. Arizona, the number five seed, did not have any issues, but again, it kind of pulls back to USF a little bit here because they ended up beating Cal Santa Barbara twice because Cal Santa Barbara took down Oklahoma State twice. Oklahoma State is the team that knocked Texas out of the Big 12 tournament, so Ole Miss, incidentally, again, got pushed to a final game. They had beaten Florida State in a tough game. Southern Miss had to beat Florida State and Ole Miss on the same day, Sunday, and did it, and then was ahead of them 7-4 after the first inning on Monday. You heard me right. But Ole Miss came back to win by the score of 12-9. So drama all over the place in the NCAA tournament. It's not an easy event to progress out of at any stage, or at least for most teams, it's not. And then the other ones that begin on Saturday, and I think this case, certainly it was a case of the NCAA realizing that teams that had to get pushed further along maybe helped them out by starting late on Saturday. And you can't start any later. In fact, the Bulls will be the last Super Regional to begin. 9 o'clock Tampa time on Saturday night, and again Sunday night for Game 2. The other ones that are pushed to Sunday, well, this makes sense. Dallas Baptist against Virginia. This is definitely the wildest scenario because you had two teams that were not hosts both advance. And this is something I was thinking about during the softball regional. If the Bulls had been able to beat the Gators twice, which as we know is going to be difficult, because they were potentially maybe going to go up against a team from the opposite regional that wasn't the host, which ended up not happening because Georgia won. So what happens when two regional teams advance and neither was hosting? You actually stay in one of those cities, and that'll be Columbia, South Carolina. That's where Virginia was the advancing team. And this was all sorts of crazy because, again, Old Dominion was the seeded team, 11th, but they weren't pegged as a potential host. So South Carolina got to host, even though Old Dominion was the seeded team. And Old Dominion took out South Carolina in the winner's bracket game. And then Virginia beat South Carolina and Old Dominion, both by one run, to force an if-necessary game, which was played yesterday morning. That's right, Tuesday morning. And Virginia won. So you've got Virginia and Dallas Baptist playing in Columbia. Oh, by the way, Dallas Baptist advanced out of Fort Worth, Texas. So again, Big 12 team that was the number two seed in that conference is out. So the Big 12 only has two teams left, and Texas being one of them. The other supers that begin on Sunday at noon, by the way, LSU at Tennessee, of course, a matchup of SEC teams. LSU, another great story. They had to eliminate Oregon and did it twice. That was actually the only regional host that was a 2-0 team that lost twice. That was Oregon to LSU, which goes to Knoxville, and then Notre Dame at Mississippi State. Those teams had no issues, went 3-0 in their regional. So, Texas, yes, great stats, very intimidating, and no doubt they've been to the College World Series more than any other program 36 times. The scariest part about the Longhorns, definitely their top two pitchers. And this is not going to be any tricks thrown by either squad here when you get to this format. It is a regular series, so to speak, so you're going to go with your arms right to begin it so the Bulls can expect to see Ty Madden, one of the finalists for the Golden Spikes Award, a power arm, 7-4 with a 2.59 ERA, 110 strikeouts in 94 innings, and 35 walks in there. Their number two starter actually has better win-loss totals and ERA, just not the strikeout fear. That would be Pete Hansen, 9-1 with a 1.84 ERA. Again, fewer than one strikeout per inning pitch. Madden is the guy that's going to rack up the Ks. They also have a pretty decent third starter as well, Tristan Stevens. He's actually who got the ball for their first regional game. They blew away Southern 11-0, and he gave them a long outing. And by the way, now leads the team in wins. When you have a number three starter that's basically going to win every time out, that's not a bad spot to be in. 10-3 now with a 2.77 ERA. Those are their three starters. Those are the guys that the Bulls are going to have to beat at least twice. Tanner Witt has 5 saves. Aaron Nixon has 8 saves. And their team ERA, again, is a 2.87. Their opponent's ERA, in other words, how often the Longhorns score, is a 6.6. And yes, they do it a lot with the walks. In fact, their final game, they beat Fairfield by the score of 12-2. They walked 11 times on their side with Hansen pitching. He walked none and struck out 13. So they are darn good. But again, I mentioned they were beatable. Listen, they didn't stroll through the season. They were very solid. If you finish first place in the Big 12, you are very solid. But it's just going to be a difficult lineup to navigate through. The leading hitter is their DH cleanup guy, Ivan Melendez, top hitter at 330, top homers with 12, and actually second on the team in RBI, 46. Their home run totals, as far as their leaders goes, is actually similar to the Bulls trio of Lane, Hogan, and Pena, with Melendez 12, Zach Zubia, and Cam Williams 10 each. Zubia is their first baseman and their number three hitter. Cam Williams is their third baseman and their number five hitter. Melendez, with those 12 homers, it should be noted, picked up 6 of those in a 6-game span. Yeah, he had a 6 home run in a row game span earlier this season. It should be noted, though, against the number 8 seed, their first game in the conference tournament. Now, West Virginia had to win the 8-9 game first, actually beat the Longhorns, and they beat Ty Madden. And now, he didn't give up a bunch of runs. The score was 5-1, but he only coughed up 3 of them. But they had him on the ropes and out of the game, and then they added 2 in the 9th inning, West Virginia. Then, Texas, I don't think they would have been the number 2 seed if they lost their next game, and it was a close one. Tight throughout, but they beat Oklahoma 4-1. Oklahoma probably needed that game to make the NCAA tournament. The bubble team, other than the Sooners, was Baylor, was the 5th best team, and they actually had a low 40s RPI but didn't get in, hence the 4 teams only from the conference. So in that game, it was Tristan Stevens, again, who got the ball for the first game in the regional and their number 3 starter, and he went 7 stellar innings. And I'm telling you, if they had lost that game, they certainly would not have gotten the number 2 seed and maybe had to win the next game. They almost got beat by West Virginia again, but they get 2 in the bottom of the 6th to win 3-2. That one was close throughout. Get this, they got out hit 6-3. But they also walked 10 times. Oh, man, sounds like a team that's going to be annoying at the plate. And again, their number 2 starter, Pete Hansen, a career-high 9 strikeouts in 6 2/3 innings. Then they fell to Oklahoma State. At this point, they're down to their number 4 pitcher by the score of 5-4. So they didn't exactly barn burn their way into the NCAA tournament. You could actually say it was a little bit surprising that they were given the number 2 overall seed, but they were going to get a high seed no matter what. And we'll talk even more about Texas and their specific individuals, 13 of whom, we've already mentioned some, but they had 13 get all conference honors of some sort, even if we're talking about honorable mention. So basically their whole team is good. And keep an eye on my Twitter page. I'll be heading out to baseball practice today and take some photos, I'm sure, at Derek Sharp, DarekSharp. Starting lineup for the National Track and Field Meet in Oregon. Congratulations to all that made it there. Big step in their careers. And it begins today, actually. Good photo, actually, on GoUSFBulls.com, which also has the complete schedule of a kind of a conglomerate photo of all 9 of the individuals. Today at 8:30 Eastern, which, of course, in Oregon is going to be late afternoon, Stone Baker, pole vault, will be competing. Duncan Agyemang in the 400-meter hurdles semifinals tonight as well. Then tomorrow, both of our relay teams, and it'll be spread apart by about 3 hours. The women's 4x100 relay team, consisting of Zaria Allers-Lebird, Shania Benjamin, Gabriel Desroger, and Kadisha Prescott. School record time. This took place last weekend, or 2 weekends ago, actually, in Jacksonville. They placed 8th in the region quarterfinals. That got them there. Then the 4x4 team of Desroger, Benjamin, Patricia Rochofa, Jasmine Knowles, and Janisha Hextall. And I mentioned 5 because it's a sort of treated as a unit situation. You can actually mix up your relay competitors if you want to, and the Bulls have done that throughout the course of the year. They also set a school record at the preliminaries. Also, Shania Benjamin in the long jump on Thursday. So she probably will not be in one or the other of those two relay teams, considering at 6:30, the women's 4x1 semis, then Shania in the long jump at 8, and then at 9:48 is a women's 4x400 relay. That's, again, why they sort of register an extra participant in the relays. Friday, the 400-meter hurdles finals, so we hope that Duncan's in that. And then Saturday is the finals in both relays. So best of luck to all involved there. We told you that Anna Marie Bruni was up as far as one of the finalists for the Senior Class Award, a tremendous honor. She didn't get the win. Now, Rachel Garcia, who is a tremendous, tremendous pitcher for UCLA, also a great student athlete, was the winner of the Senior Class Award. But what they did, and this is really cool, they announced a first team and a second team, 5 members on each, and USF's Anna Marie Bruni is a first teamer. Senior class, CLASS obviously, stands for celebrating loyalty and achievement for staying in school. So these are folks that are graduating, obviously, Anna Marie Bruni in her 5th year with USF, and we will try and get an interview with her at some point. That is a big time honor. And we end with this. Ashley Mead, who only got in the game a couple of times her senior season, but was a true beloved member of the women's soccer team, and an outstanding individual, and very smart. She served on a lot of committees behind the scenes that you guys didn't know about. I remember one of the Zoom meetings we did as a entire athletics program where she spoke and was so very impressive. This doesn't surprise me, only that it's right after her college career. Usually, you know, you get groomed a little bit before you become a head coach. But Ashley Mead was named the head coach, and again, she just graduated from USF, of Tampa Prep Women's Soccer. How about that? And that's going to do it for Bulls Beat. Thank you, guys. We'll talk to you again on Friday. Thanks for listening. I'm Derek Sharp.